Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 8 of Slam Fire Radio for June 6, 2013. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor the Frelate, and with me tonight is
Owen the Warrior Flewellyn.
Yeah, we didn't really plan this. We don't know who was gonna go next.
So I just went next, Matthew, so now it would be you.
Matthew, oh, we're going alphabetical. Perfect.
Matthew, you actually interrupted yourself there. I'm super impressed.
Some days I can divide by zero.
All you had to do was say your name, but you managed to interrupt yourself and didn't say your name.
Who am I? It was just a warning shot. Shot across the bow, if you will.
There you go. And with us tonight, we have a very, very special guest, a longtime listener of...
That's right. It's Steve Lee, all the way from Australia.
Almost.
G'day.
long-time listener of all the CRR network shows. You know him. You love his emails. They're better written than I read them. The one and only 10X. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, gentlemen. And it is an undisputed pleasure to be here. The only thing I didn't anticipate is exactly how hard it would be to stop laughing out loud when you guys are doing your banter.
Now you're part of it.
That's right. Now you got to learn to muffle your mic or something to, you know, keep it in check.
Oh, it's I'm going to have some sore abdominal muscles from keeping it laughing.
We hope.
Well, Peter, why don't you kick us off? As everybody knows, we usually start the show with what we've done with guns this week. You haven't been on before, so you can go back as far as you want. What have you done with guns your whole life?
Well, my whole life. Whoa. Sherman set the Wayback Machine. Here we go.
Sherman.
Let's get to the main topic. Let's just try and keep it within a 2 to 3 week window for now.
Okay.
I know you guys run epically long, but this could be a real test here. What have I done with guns this week? Well, actually, I ordered one of the PressCheck Ventures 50 Beowulf mags.
Hey, we know those guys, don't we?
Yep. I didn't figure it out, but it arrived in the mail. And there was a second mag in compensation for all the scotch desecration that had gone on in previous episodes.
Only so, one? They should give you shares of the company.
I was really pleased to see that, and was even more pleased after I took it up to the range. I ran 30 rounds through each of the mags. Absolutely no problems at all. No failures to feed. They hold open on the last shot. They eject freely.
Peter?
Yep.
What firearm did you use?
I have the Cheapo Narinko CQB.
Perfect.
Yep. Very nice.
So if they think that, they'll work in anything.
Pretty much.
Possibly. I was hoping there'd be somebody else with another AR platform at the range when I was there, but it was not to be. Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I have quite a few of the LAR 10 rounders, and in fact, I'd taken a few of those up to test out because I'd put in some Ranger base plates on them, and I don't think I'm going to need them again, ever. The Beowulf mags are the way to go.
Very nice.
Awesome. Yeah. What else did you do?
There was something I'd been wanting to do for a little while on my revolvers. I have 3 Smith & Wesson revolvers, and there had been a post on Gun Nuts suggesting that you replace the main spring tension screw with 8x32 by half-inch stainless steel set screws. Uh-huh. What that lets you do is put more or less tension on the mainspring so you can dial into the point where it's light enough to give you consistent ignition on the primers every single time. So I had my 6.86 out at the range there, a couple of hundred rounds of 38 special, and just stayed there taking the grip on and off, tweaking that screw until I got it to the point where it would fire consistently.
I tell you what, Peter, when I return your trigger spring tool that I've had for nearly a year at the charity shoot, Can you bring your revolver and show me that little tweak, that little mod that you've done?
Not a problem. In fact, I have some of the spare stainless steel set screws. I'll bring them along.
Oh, fantastic. That sounds like a neat little modification.
Well, whenever you're running any reduced mainspring in the revolvers, the biggest issue is some people say you're limited to the type of primers that you're going to use, usually Federal being the softest.
Yep.
With this tweak, you know, I can run as many Winchesters or CCI in it as I like and still get the best feeling trigger.
Now, I put the Bangs Inc. spring kit in mine. You know that. That's why you let me borrow your tool. And it does say in the instructions for installation on that spring kit to go with the Federal primers. Do you think then with the mainspring from Jerry Mikulik and this modification that I'd be going too far even for Federal primers?
You should be good to change them up. The only thing you may notice, Trevor, is a slight increase in the trigger pull itself.
Oh.
As you put more tension on the mainspring, that is going to make the trigger pull and double action heavier.
Oh, your single action, a little lighter.
Yep. You know what? Do what I did. Take it up there and see exactly how far you can turn it down before you start getting misfires.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And it's not a home defense gun, so, well, no.
It might be. You never know.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah.
That's the thing. All you need is a couple of extra turns of that screw, and you're back to the point where it's going to fire reliably every single time.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, and you can actually count the turns and know, you know, what to do before and after you leave the range.
Yeah, when you're all done, when you're happy, a little bit of Loctite, and you're good to go.
Fantastic. But, Trevor, can you count that high?
To potato? It'll go to potato, right, Peter?
Yeah, it's 8x32 inch screws, so, you know, by the amount of turns, you won't even need to take your shoes off. You should be good.
Oh, sweet. Well, and if I do have to take my shoes off, the good news is they're on with Velcro. So, two straps on either shoe, right?
Yeah.
Beauty.
I've got cool. to get me some of those.
It really speeds up your morning. Let me tell you, Trevor is out of the house now in half an hour instead of three.
Put twice the effort into tightening my helmet now.
So what he hardly ever misses the short bus anymore.
I drive it. Anything else, Peter?
Yeah. I did what I call a pilgrimage. I don't know if you guys ever indulge in this. I made the rounds of the local gun shops, mainly to see what they have on the shelves. And
oh, yes, I do that all the time. Sorry to cut you off, but it's what I do. Yeah, we've got one gun shop in like a 100-mile radius here. Yeah, no, I'd make the rounds. Yeah.
Pilgrimage there. Home.
Yeah. And it's the usual question. Do you have any primers? No. Do you have any 2400 powder? No. Thanks, I'll be back next week. But,
I was gifted primers today. I got a 1,000 Federal primers today as a gift at the range.
I'm not going to ask what you did for that.
I'll tell you about it later. Fire, of course.
That'll be in the outtakes.
And, and actually, I'm trying not to embarrass myself at the charity shoot, so I did do some practicing.
Oh, so you are going. That's awesome.
Both of us are.
You know
9X
that.
Will be there as well.
Very nice.
Unfortunately, he hasn't been practicing much.
Which you know, means he'll probably still kick your butt.
I've got a few more years. And I've put him under a handicap. He's using a revolver that's older than double my age. So, yeah.
Oh, he's using the Webley, right?
Yeah, he's going to use the Webley Mark VI.
Mm-hmm.
Owen, you should let me take your revolver. We'll let him use that.
Yeah. You couldn't pull that trigger with two hands, probably.
56 and a half pound trigger pull or whatever it is.
Oh, I had to do a considerable amount of work on the spring in that Webley just to get it to the point where he could use double action.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's it.
Very good. All right then, Matthew, see if you can top that.
I cannot. Owen, what'd you do this week? I did a little bit of shooting this week. I went and did some sighting in for the charity shoot. I was using Jules' rifle. It's got a bit of a more comfortable stock, so I thought, but I don't think it is more comfortable now than my straight stock on my my regular Marlin 795. So I think, and the other thing was I did some offhand shooting after I zeroed it at 40 meters, and I did some when I did the offhand shooting on 9 power, I was all over the place. So it's a 3-9 scope, so I turned it down to 3, and I shot half the group size. Like, it shrunk it so much. And I think it's that all my wobbliness is less magnified under 3 power instead of 9 power. So I don't even think I'm going to shoot on 9 power. So I'm thinking of just using the 1.5 to 4.5 scope that I have on, it was just laying around. So I put it on my straight stock 795. I think I'm going to use that.
Sorry, Matthew, what distance?
I was at 40 meters.
So 40 meters, you had to turn it down, but have you tried the different power out to 100 yet?
I did, yeah. I just put some clay targets out on the 100-yard berm. Well, it's actually 120-yard berm because apparently I can't count to 100 in French here.
Oh, that's rude. Anyway.
Hey, that's all right. Our 200-yard berm, quote-unquote 200, is only 183.
So they can't count to 100 or 200
we're
in English
each other
either.
On the berm stories? Fine, I've got one too. We pushed our 100-meter berm back to the tree line to try and get 600. The ground dips down so low that you cannot see the berm from the shooting line.
You need a bigger berm.
Fail. Anyway, carry on, Matthew. Well,
the curvature of the earth got in the way.
That just works because it's, the whole trajectory thing.
That's right. You just arc it over the ground.
Yeah, only I don't know what I'm aiming at because I can't see my target stand.
Yeah, that does kind of suck. So anyway, I've long story short, I might switch out what I'm using. But that's kind of good because there were two other people slotted to use that rifle anyway. Jewel, of course, is going to use it. And Bolivar asked if he could use it because he doesn't have a 22 with a scope. So
what? I can't believe he didn't ask for me for my Mark II.
Because I don't know either. That would probably be the better option, Bolivar, if you're listening, because Trevor's rifle is going to be more accurate than mine, but you use whatever you want. Doesn't bother me at all.
Now my feelings are hurt.
Oh, my goodness.
He's probably just hoping there's a little bit of that, Matthew 22 arms magic, rubbing off on it.
That's what it is, Owen.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That could be it. I think there's some sort of powder for that. It's an itch, though. That
Pixie
it just
dust.
Won't. Yeah. I don't know how to respond to that. So I'm going to move on. there are 1,000 projectiles for me in the mail from Calibers. Is that a better way of phrasing that, you two? Am I okay saying it that way?
Better yes. saying I have them.
Oh, there now. We go. See, originally I had written in the notes, I have 1,000 projectiles in the mail for me from
that's
Calibers.
Awesome.
They're like, well, that's implied that you already have them. And I'm like, I don't, though. Is there in the mail? Anyway, I don't know why I'm discussing this. So yeah, Dave from Calibers in Ontario, he's done his first batch of 124 grain 9mm projectiles, and they're actually 133 grain, so they're not for sale. They're for testing and to show the quality of the projectile. He said that I should be fairly impressed. So
we're gonna load these.
Yeah, so
I'm
gonna
load
bring
them.
Some of these, right?
Everybody's going to get some. And by everybody, I mean me and whoever helps me load them.
I have two. I got a Dylan here.
So does Trevor.
I have two Dylans.
Oh, you guys fight it out. So yeah, whenever they show up, I'll be taking them to either Owen's or Trevor's, and I'll bring my powder and projectiles. And
I believe I was promised
primers.
Half of these projectiles 2 days ago.
I recount that.
You recount
Wait,
that?
Wait, rescind it. There you go. Yeah, well, I did say that to Trevor,
10X,
but it wasn't recorded, so it doesn't count.
10X, he needs a lesson in English, how she spoke.
Yeah, how she has spoke.
I think he's gone beyond lesson time.
Uh-oh. Tighten your helmet, Matthew, and keep going.
All right, I got one more little funny story, and it's not even that funny. My brother-in-law got married a couple weekends ago, or last weekend, or something.
Yeah,
there was some time ago.
That's
no.
not funny, no.
But at his, anyway, at his bachelor party, they were talking about guns or something, and this one guy pulled up this YouTube video and said, "Here, check out this guy shooting these guns."
Oh, no.
And my brother-in-law is like, "That's my brother-in-law." It was me. It was one of my videos.
Better than FBS Russia.
So I got to meet this guy at the wedding, and so Nathaniel, hi, how you doing? I doubt you're listening, but anyway, have fun shooting those muskets.
Wow, that's funny.
So yeah, that was pretty much my week. So I believe we're moving on to Owen. What did you get up to, man? Besides not shooting a bear tonight?
Yes.
Did you get video?
I did get some video of a very cute little cub and mama bear.
Cubs are the tenderest.
They were. It was about the size of my cat.
Yeah, you can fit that whole thing right in the crock pot.
Yep.
I'm sure it was the smallest cub I've ever seen.
Football size?
Yeah, pretty close.
Cool.
Yeah, it was.
So how far did you throw it?
Yeah. It was skittish. It was up, down trees and everything. I saw some pretty cool stuff tonight. So
was it vocalizing, like going up the tree and then calling the mom?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And the mom was snapping and huffing and everything. Yeah, there was a raccoon that came into the bait while they were there.
Uh-oh.
And Mama Bear put the run to it, almost got it.
Oh.
It went up a tree, and she went right up the tree after it, up about 15 feet. And it kept right on going. It was a pretty small tree. And she had to come back down. But that was kind of cool.
That would be cool, yeah.
So as far as shooting, though, I was at the range this week and did a little bit of Glock work and just basic target shooting, nothing fancy, nothing dynamic, just working on front sight and trigger pull and shooting everywhere from 5 to 25. So nothing very exciting there.
Well, trigger time's always exciting.
I guess so, yeah. I guess the only other thing that happened at the range this week is today I was able to convince my wife to go. And so we made it out to the range today for a few minutes.
A few minutes. Yep, I'm here. I've had enough. Let's go.
Well, we didn't have much time, so we just ran in and down, and she put a few mags through the Glock, and yeah.
Cool. How'd she like it? She shot it before, hasn't she?
No, that was the first time she shot a handgun ever.
Oh, how'd she like it?
Well, I hope she doesn't get into IPSC because she will embarrass us.
Oh.
Her first 10 shots I covered with the palm of my hand.
Nice.
And after that, she just
started. And then you moved back to 5 yards.
No, that was at 5. And yeah, then she just started shooting spots in the target because she got bored of putting them all in the same spot.
So needless to say, the grip on the Gen 4 Glock 17 is going to work then?
I think so. Now, she said she had a hard time shooting the center of the target. She said, I have to tilt the gun funny to make it shoot there. And she couldn't really explain to me what she was talking about. Because I said, you want to lock everything together, your sight picture, your arms, your upper body. So no matter where you're pointing, nothing changes. You don't, you know, lift your head or lower your head. I mean, once you have your sight picture, your whole upper body just moves as one unit to wherever you're aiming. So I'm not really sure what she was doing there.
She could have been trying to twist the gun in her hand to get the right amount of fingertip on the trigger.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that it was more of a sighting issue, I think, than a
Well, I wonder if it was. Oh, go ahead, Peter.
Oh, and do you still have the stock sights on the Glock?
Yes. Well, I guess the rear sight is something that Trevor sent me, but it is a Glock.
It's a Glock adjustable.
Yeah. Okay. I've often found with a lot of neophyte shooters, they have trouble with the front sight on the Glock.
I'm sorry, what?
With some neophyte new shooters?
No, I don't understand the question.
We're not allowed to make up words on this show.
No, you've got to dumb it down a little bit, would you?
I understood what you meant, Peter.
Yeah. Listen, with George Hatch shooters, they have problems.
George, you're welcome on the show so you can reply to that.
Yeah. Well, and that man does a new shooter podcast, and new shooters sometimes have problems seeing that front sight. Yep. It's just a funny thing with the Glock front sight.
Yeah, she said it was hard focus. She seemed to get it. But anyway, whatever the issue was, it didn't seem to be a problem because she was putting them basically wherever she wanted to put them. So
that's good.
That was kind
of. So you don't want my SR9 now is what you're saying.
Well, I don't know. I'd like her to try it.
Yeah.
It's more because when she did handle it, she said it was more natural for her to get a sight picture.
Yeah.
And something like the SR9 or the M&P9.
You should get to that new little what was that little pistol we were looking at, Trevor?
That little bullpup pistol.
Oh, yeah.
That yeah.
I forget what it was called.
Think for that, Trevor. I can't find it again. I looked for it and I couldn't find it.
It's a Wolverine.
Yeah, I looked all over their website and I couldn't find it.
Did you look in the pistol section?
Did you look in the pistol section? I was looking in the rifles. It's a bullpup, isn't it?
I went to the pistol section, and I looked through every page on the pistol section to look for it.
Well, could it be that it's down?
I don't know.
Maybe it's illegal?
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Anyway.
I don't understand the question.
Are bullet pups legal in Canada?
Well, they are for a little while, and then they're
Thursday already?
If they're from China, they start off legal, then they go illegal, then they come back legal again.
And then you can shoot them into space.
That's right. Everybody knows that about a bullpup.
And the only other thing I did is I put 100 primers in my reloading press. And that's as far as I got.
You didn't actually reload anything. You just
I didn't actually reload anything. I just topped up the priming tube, and that was it.
I suppose it's a thought that counts.
I had to do something, I guess.
I have so much brass. I've got like 5,000 projectiles and primers and 8 pounds of powder. It's all sitting there, and this great, you know, Dylan 600, and it's all there, and I still can't seem to get up there and do it. So, anyway, maybe someday.
Maybe someday.
Yep.
My someday is next week.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Trevor, you a long list.
And I keep adding to it. But before I do anything,
I'm going to start deleting from it.
this next sound is for Peter. Everybody catch that?
Yeah, yes. It sounds like a cork coming out of a bottleneck.
That's exactly what it was. You're good. You do know your scotch.
Not nearly as good as you. You called the age.
I did call the age. I was off by 1 year, though. And I did call the malt. I said it was single.
Yep.
So anybody want to take any guesses at what that was?
No.
Coming out of the bottle.
Was it Scottish?
It was Scottish.
Huh.
Wow, this is so much more fun with Chris Anderson.
Yeah.
Okay, I was at a liquor store attached to a savings in a French community, so I wasn't being picky. And I searched for a long time before I found a 12-year-old bottle of Glenfiddich.
Mm. All right.
So it'll get me through to 10X.
Oh, yeah.
Glenfiddich is a perfectly nice scotch. Just because it's fairly easily available, a lot of people seem to have a bit of a hate on for it. But it's a good example of a nice Speyside malt.
I agree. And they have an 18, right?
Yep.
Numbered bottles, 18. I tried that the same night I tried Johnny Walker Blue, and it just reconfirmed that I am a single malt Scotch guy. I'll take Glenfiddich 18 over Johnny Walker Blue or a lot of high-end Scotches any day.
The unfortunate thing is, Trevor, that Johnny Walker Blue is more of a marketing exercise than a high-end Scotch.
I would say.
You know, kind of like 1911s.
Say that again.
Have a 1911.
I said that's kind of like 1911s.
Yeah. It's all about marketing. Repackaging the same crap and selling it to more suckers. All right. I have a very long list, and we don't want to go epic long. So I taught 2 Black Badge courses this week. Unfortunately, my partners in crime, Owen and David and Matthew, were not with me, but I managed to motor through on my own anyway. I had Muffin with me in the Miramichi. We put 6 guys through, and they did really good. Two guys did exceptionally well, one RCMP member, and another guy who had an MMP who he had never shot before, He hadn't shot it.
Yeah. If you're done having your seizure, why don't you back up and try that one again?
So one of the guys had an MMP that he had never shot before and did really well, really, really well with it. The second black badge I put on was really small, like one person small. This was a makeup for Officer Frank's wife. She wanted to take the one that we put on in Restigouche with all of us that were there, but unfortunately she had a motorcycle course to take. So I did a little makeup for her, and we did the bookwork at her place, and we got all the qualifiers done last night in about 3.5 hours, right? She did really well, but I think that she could actually benefit from an SR9 because the grip is just smaller in all dimensions than a Glock, and I was catching her often not getting enough finger on the trigger, and I can only attribute that to her hands being too small for the grip or the grip being too small for her hands. So
if I got a question for you about Glock grip, this is something I forgot to mention. Tuesday when I was at the range, I'm shooting my Glock and I noticed this happened to me a number of different times. It wasn't just a one-off thing. It happened many times. My mags were coming loose I was gripping the gun so completely and so tight that I was pushing on the mag release and dropping my mags partway through the mag.
It's not.
It wouldn't actually drop out. It would just, you know, come out a little bit so that it wouldn't feed.
Yeah. Not just a Glock problem. There's all kinds of people that grip pistols all kinds of funny ways. I was coaching somebody today, and he was riding his slide lock.
Yeah, that happens a fair bit for me because I've got longer fingers and longer thumbs.
Yeah.
But I've never, ever had this happen to me before where it actually dropped the mag out because I was gripping the gun right.
Well, if you're now gripping the gun right and that's happening, look at throwing a back strap on there to change the ergonomics a little bit. Get you off of that mag release. Do you have the Glock OME extended mag release?
No. No, just it's all, I mean, it's factory. I've never done a thing to this gun except put that adjustable sight on the back.
Okay. Owen?
Yes.
Glock ships with the smallest back strap on. So it sounds like your hands are somewhat large for that small back strap. So, yeah, maybe go up to the biggest one and try it again.
And actually, Peter, he's taken it off. He's got...
I tried that once. I mean, the smallest one is with no back strap on, and then it comes with the medium and large. And I put the medium on it one time because I thought that.
Three.
Because I had handled your 45, Trevor, and had the bigger grip on it. And I said, oh, I kind of like the feel of that. So I tried it, and I couldn't hit anything. I was very inaccurate with it. So I went back. I didn't feel like I had as much control of the gun.
But in all fairness, how long did you give it? It's not going to happen in 10 shots.
No, I gave it one day at the range.
Yeah? Okay. So
maybe not enough. I don't know.
Maybe. Because you're going to it's going to change the contact between your finger and the trigger.
Maybe you can help me out with this one. I don't know if it's legal in IPSC. But have you seen the beaver tail grips for Glocks?
Yep.
I have.
Errol Green from Phaselane Green Tactical has one on his G22, and I tried that, and it is very, very nice. It might actually put your hand in a better position to stop that finger wrapping around and hitting the mag release.
Glock 22? Well,
this is the thing. It wasn't. It was my support hand.
Ah.
That was because my fingers on my support hand reach all the way around to the other side of the gun,
uh-huh,
and I'm squeezing it together. I was actually the pad of, you know, that muscle right at the base of your thumb.
The thenar process.
Pushing on the mag release.
He's making words up again.
I'm not. It's a medical term. I'm telling you, it's called the thenar process.
Yeah, right. No, that's made up.
Sure. I totally believe you.
I believe
not
you too.
Kind of podcast. So. Work it out so I can keep going because I got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Please go. Yeah.
Sorry, dude.
So basically, you're no help to me. Suck it up and don't do it anymore. That's what you're saying.
Just grip the gun in such a way that you don't do it. Moving on. So last week I talked about how I was helping to prepare for a press conference for the 2013 Canadian IPSC National Championships.
How'd that go?
It was phenomenal.
Awesome. Move on to the next point.
All right. So, no, but seriously, though, we were really impressed. Get this. CBC TV showed up.
Wow. Yep.
That's cool.
The French CBC TV, but CBC nonetheless. We had...
they still sort of count.
Yep. They're still CBC. And we had local radio stations, TV, and paper newspapers show up. And it was really cool. Sal did an amazing job. And after it was done, we did some individual interviews with radio and TV and stuff like that. It was really cool. And we have more coming. I've got the Bathurst radio station. One of the guys who returned my call, they couldn't make it, but he returned my call. Turns out he's a gun owner, and he's more excited about this thing than I am. I'm getting him out to the range. We're going to do a couple hours at the range. Going to put him in the IPSC gear. He's going to take video for the radio station's website. We're going to do an audio interview. He's pumped. Then after that,
taking video for the radio is kind of...
For the radio's website, I believe I said website. Anyway, Rogers TV called me, and they want to do a 6-part series on the Nationals.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty pumped about that too. Other than that, then I found some time to get out and shoot my Press Check Ventures mags. I got six more, and I put them through. So far, I've shot my Press Check Ventures mags through four different AR-15s, my XTR, an SU-16, and a Tavor. And up until I put it through Officer Frank's AR, we've had no issues. But his mag, or bolt release, is like ridiculously tight. I don't know what the issue is, but it unfortunately didn't lock open on that particular gun. But that's, you know, actually that makes, no, that's the fourth AR it's been through. But all the other guns, everything's been working flawlessly. So unfortunately, I was kind enough to give him a mag, so now I'm down a mag, but he's happy, so whatever.
Unfortunately, you're kind. That's funny.
Unfortunately, all right. I'm kind, yep.
Yeah.
I shot some, I've been practicing for the Nationals, right? So I've been shooting with my Glock 35. I ordered a high-vis fiber optic sight to go on my new Glock 22. It's the same front sight that I use on all of my Glocks and all of my guns, actually, because I've got one on my 686 as well. And once again, thank you to Peter for sending me that little drill bit. Otherwise, it would never be on there.
You're
all
welcome.
All of my high-vis sights have had a hard, clear plastic cover over the fiber optic until this one. I couldn't remember what website I was ordering them off of, and one day at work I was bored, so I was shopping for gun stuff, obviously, and I found them at Bass Pro, and they shipped it to Canada. It was $67 for this front sight. This one didn't have that hard clear plastic over the actual fiber optic, and it came with four different pieces of fiber optic in different colors with a little carrying case that is like a rotary drum, and you rotate and the piece of fiber optic comes out, a little tool to change them. The frame is the same, but it doesn't have that hard clear plastic, and it's insanely bright. And Jason seems to think that the actual diameter of the red fiber optic itself is larger than what we're using, and I highly recommend it. Anybody that wants to switch to a fiber optic sight on their Glock, it's amazing, super bright, really nice size, and yeah, check it out. So it's high-vis, and you can get them at Bass Pro. Tonight, we actually, I'm going to switch up here in the order. My Dillon parts came in, finally. When they first sent me the parts, they didn't send me all the parts. And side story about Dillon. Remember we talked about how Dillon was going to replace Jason's press form if
yep.
the fire department sent a copy of the report?
Mm-hmm.
When Sal's called back and said, okay, who do I send this report to? Completely different story. All of a sudden, now all I can do is 22% off on a new press.
Hmm. Oh, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Lame, Dillon. Well, no, they're still pretty good. I mean, I was really shocked that they were going to give him a free press. So, you know, I didn't say anything at the time, but I kind of thought maybe
this guy...
Too good
to be true, yeah.
Yeah. But it's still good that he's getting, you know, a good chunk off of it if he decides to buy another one. I mean, they are good in that regard.
Yeah. And then, but somebody actually lent him a 550.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah,
talk about that here in a second. Well, they'll talk about the guy who lent him the press. Tonight, we were at the range. I actually had to build the stages for this weekend's match. For this weekend's match, is going to be 8 stages. There's going to be the house and the maze. One's a field course, one's a medium, and then 6 classifiers. So all of your scores will actually be sent to IPSC, so you can be classified and ranked. So if you don't have a an alias yet, you're going to need one if you want to have your scores sent in. But before that happened, I was actually doing a paid coaching gig. One of the gentlemen in one of the black badges that I put on this year contacted me and asked me if I was available for some private paid one-on-one coaching. So I thought, yeah, I used to coach a lot of archery, and I haven't done any coaching other than instructing black badges, but that's very general. You don't get a lot of one-on-one. So I said yes, and we went out to the range, and I'm starting with, you know, basic fundamentals. We worked on, first of all, we want to see if his gun was sighted in, and it wasn't. So we sighted it in his gun, and then we went with draw, the fundamentals of the draw, and we did a drill where it was draw your gun and acquire a perfect sight picture and get an A hit. So we slowed everything down, and basically what I wanted him to see was what he had to see in order to shoot an A from the draw. So from the holster, from the draw, whatever. So we went through all the steps, draw the gun, come up, get the perfect sight picture, surprise compress break, shoot an A. And we did that several times, nice and slow, so that he could train his mind to understand what he actually had to see to shoot an A from the holster. So we did that, and then we did some mag changes, and after that we're going to start. It's going to be a progression, right? We're going to crawl before we walk and walk before we run. So it's pretty cool, and it also reinforces what I need to do, because every time you're at the range practicing, you should do something that has to do with the fundamentals, because if your fundamentals aren't down, nothing else is going to matter. You can get in and out of a box as fast as you can. You can go prone as fast as you can, change mags fast, but if you can't get your hits, none of it's going to matter. So I'm focusing on accuracy before anything else. And finally, did you guys get your new ATTs?
Not yet.
All right.
No, I haven't got mine, but my neighbor got one, got his.
Okay. Well,
I was hearing about this.
Well, Ontario and New Brunswick last year were both under draconian rule, and were both told that from now on they were going to require an invitation to attend a range other than their primary range. The response in Ontario was that the CSSA decided to take all of the Canadian membership's money and sue the Ontario government. But they weren't suing the New Brunswick government, which I thought was kind of a ripoff. Why are they fighting for the Ontario gun owners but not the Canadian or the New Brunswick gun owners when we're being slapped with the same restriction? Well, lucky for us, we got a new CFO. And there was immediate talk about how this guy was going to work with firearms owners, and he was really willing to rebuild bridges that were burned and get back on track. At the first meeting that he attended with the New Brunswick Firearms Advisory Committee, he said things like, if there's a problem at your range, we'll work with you to get it fixed. We won't shut you down arbitrarily. We'll tell you what needs to be done, and we'll give you a reasonable time frame in order to get the repairs done, and then we'll come back and make sure you stay open. He also said things like, this invitation business to take your restricted firearm to an improved range, I really don't see the point of that, so it'll take me a little while, but I'll get that undone. So here it is. Letter dated sometime this week says, notice, the New Brunswick Firearms Office has implemented a new authorization to transport ATT protocol for ATTs to go to and from your shooting range. The ATTs are primarily for the transportation to the shooting range where you are a member. This ATT will also include transport to all, and it's underlined, New Brunswick shooting ranges approved for the discharge of restricted firearms and 12-6 prohibited handguns where guests are permitted. Please note that the requirement of a letter of permission from a range where you will travel to as a guest has been removed. Read it and weep, Ontario.
Very good. I like it.
Yeah.
You know what else, you know what else is interesting?
I got one more little go button thing going, then you can have it. Why is it that to get this removed in Ontario, they have to spend tens of thousands of our membership dues to sue the CFO, but in New Brunswick, with the stroke of a pen, he can undo this policy?
Now, it's the
same Firearms Act from coast to coast. One guy makes up a rule, he has to get sued to change it. One other guy makes up a rule, he retires, the next guy comes in and says, this rule sucks balls, gone.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We're also, I think, the only province that has our own firearms advisory board.
That is correct.
And that, I think, makes a big difference when you have people who are consulting with the CFO and, you know, instead of it just being a bunch of angry people sending letters, it's experts, quote unquote,
representing us.
Yeah, representing us, sitting down and talking through this logically and, you know, explaining the issues and why this is an issue. I think that makes a big difference. Having a pro-gun provincial government helps as well.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know? I mean, it's not that they're, you know, bending over backwards for us, but they're not standing in the way. They understand that, you know, we're in a rural province. We're a big part of the population, gun owners. And,
that's true, but,
you know, there
are more licensed gun owners in Ontario than anywhere else.
Yeah, but there's a lot more unlicensed gun owners than, like, the fair ratio enough. Is different. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yep, fair enough.
So the percentage of gun owners in Ontario versus the overall population is lower than in New Brunswick. I think one of the other things you need to consider as well, Trevor, is the past history that has gone on in Ontario. There was a time, there was a CFO who's very, very much like your new CFO is. Unfortunately, Mr. Wyatt has about a year left to run in his appointment, and nothing that he does is going to reflect on him in that time. So he can sit there and tell us to go stuff it, and nothing is going to come back on him, and that's what he's doing.
That's what this last guy was like, too. I mean, he was sued in court at least twice. Wyatt's been sued, I don't know how many times, but, you know, we know Stormbringer beat him.
Yep.
And anyway, listen, Andy said it on the last week's show. The membership in the NFA and the CSSA needs to increase so they can get to that critical mass they need to really throw their weight around to help form legislation in our favor. This is another example of why we need to be members of our associations. Now, it's too bad that the CSSA is funding this in court and New Brunswick didn't have to, but it's still a thorn in my side that they sued only one provincial government, not both. Just lucky they didn't have to sue this one and common sense prevailed.
I think they knew from the get-go that New Brunswick would have been an easy victory, whereas if they do win in Ontario, then they can push that for countrywide rather than just the province itself.
Good point. It'd be the victory in Ontario would certainly be more meaningful.
Indeed. And I wouldn't put it past some of the board members in the CSSA to have reached out to people in New Brunswick and talked to the new CFO just to see if there was anything that could be done to work with them. Not necessarily something you would want to publicize too much.
Yep, absolutely.
There is an awful lot of stuff that does go on behind closed doors, and you know, we never get to hear about it. Yeah.
No, and it has to be that way. Yep.
Very good. Well, gentlemen, go ahead, Owen.
I was just going to say something interesting about this new ATT. If you look back to, I'm not going to say the original ATTs, but the two ATTs ago.
Yes.
Was very similar to what the letter that you have. But there was a bit of a stipulation in that you were free to go to any range that was a member of the RNBRA.
Yep. And the one before that was what we have now. That one kind of bothered me too, because what made the ranges that were members of the Royal New Brunswick Rifle Association somehow magically better than the rest of them? If you ask me, that was just a tactic to try and get all the ranges to join the Royal New Brunswick Rifle Association. A certified range is a certified range, and whether it's certified and a member of the Royal New Brunswick Rifle Association or certified and not, what matters to the CFO is that it's certified.
That's right.
Indeed.
Yeah, that is kind of silly.
Yep. So I think it's interesting that we actually, because of what Wyatt did, we have more freedoms now than we did, at least, you know, when Wyatt or when Doyle in, you know, had the job because of what he did, because, you know, otherwise we'd have the same thing we had before where I couldn't take my guns to Florenceville or whatever.
Yep.
Because they weren't a member of the RNBRA. Yep. So I don't know, I just think it's kind of interesting that we've got actually a little more freedom now than we did. Having said that, the ATT still does not have, it's just two ranges. You can't put, there's no gun shops on there, there's no points of entry and exit, no sorts of things.
Yeah, you gotta get all those separate.
Gotta get those separate still.
Oh, yep. We lost all the gun shops, huh?
As far as I know.
It was gunsmiths is what it was included before with the RNBRA.
Yes. Sorry, yeah, it was gunsmiths and all points of entry and exit. Yeah. You could check those off when you did your ATT, and you just have that as part of your ATT. You didn't have to get a separate short-term one for that.
You're right. And in reality, none of those are ever rejected. It's just that it's more paperwork that we have to do.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it is kind of annoying in that regard.
Speaking of which, I haven't received my ATT to the charity shoot yet.
Me either. I'm gonna have to give them a call and see where they are on that.
Yeah, I sent the invitation letter. That's published.
Yep.
Nothing. Well, gentlemen, I think that brings us into our main topic.
And by main topic, you mean we've got 15 minutes left in the show.
Yeah, so 10X, go ahead. Real quick, tell us.
Well, hold on. We can stretch the show a little bit this week. I do want to interject here and let everybody know that gun we were talking about earlier is the Bob Arm or the Bauberg XR9L.
Oh.
So if you want to go check that out, the Bauberg Arms
XR9L, and it apparently is the smallest restricted you can get in Canada. So anybody who wants to go check that out, that's what we were talking about. It's a neat little pistol, and for $1,300, it better be.
It's yeah. a funny little pistol that the slide carries the round from the magazine out and back, and then up and into the barrel.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Funny little thing.
Yeah, it's literally a bullpup pistol. It's not literally, but you know, it's like a bullpup pistol. Mm. The barrel is behind the where mag. The magazines feed, where the bullets feed. Yeah, it's kind of a crazy little gun, but it'd be kind of neat to play with, I think.
Yep.
Yep. So yeah, we, you know, like Trevor said, we got to talk to 10X here a little bit.
Yeah.
So
10X, basically, we want to know two of the most important things we want to hear about is a comparison and contrast between your life in Europe and your life in Canada as a firearms owner. And I believe you've been through at least one gun confiscation. And next, why are Scots so cheap? It's really important that we get to the root of that problem.
Okay, and bear in mind that I did say that we've only got 15 minutes left, but we don't. This is our podcast. We can run as long as we want. So listeners, I'm sorry if you have to pause the show this week. This is going to be a longer show than normal. We are going to try to keep them normally at an hour, but Trevor couldn't shut up this week. I didn't interrupt him, and this is what happens.
Yeah, but Matthew, it's called editing.
Oh, that's right. I can
just
edit
go
Trevor
to the
right
part,
out.
You know, the first part of his and go snip, and you go to the back part of his and go snip, and it's gone. I mean, it's really easy.
Then again, I don't edit the show, so.
I'm going to edit Matthew out of my life.
Sure. Then who would you have to rag on?
That's right.
Owen's a much better friend.
Well, then you won't make fun of him. What fun will that be?
Owen makes fun of me.
No, you won't make fun. Oh, anyway, whatever.
All right.
So
Peter, you go ahead, invest in that comma.
All right. I'll slow myself down. I'll take Trevor's second question first. Why are Scots so tight? Yeah, we're not tight. We just believe that we should get value for what you want. It's one of the things that people always hated playing to a Scottish audience. We don't warm to you until the end. We won't give you any idea of what's going on. You know, we paid our money. We'll sit back. Go ahead. Entertain us. If you're good, I'll let you know at the end. And that's basically why people think we're tight. We're not.
Very okay. Nice.
Yep. I'm willing to work with that.
Well, I could tell you about the old stereotype about how copper wire was invented.
Please.
Oh, I think I know this one.
Two Scots fighting over a penny.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
The real reason is we never made the transition from going from sporrans to pockets. I mean, honestly, pockets, how are you meant to reach in there and get money? With a sporran, it's up the front. And there's the odd added bonus that you could frottage around in there.
I was just going to say, your hands are up there anyway, right?
Exactly.
So, let's first talk about firearms. And probably a little bit of Scotch education as well.
All right.
Okay, so 10X, born and raised where?
Why don't you let him tell us?
I'm going to ask him some questions. You're going to be quiet and let him do it.
Sometimes I'll need the prompts just to stop me from rambling on.
Yeah, that's
I was born in a small town called Lark Hall. It's fairly close to Glasgow in Scotland. I grew up there. Didn't really become aware of firearms until I joined the Scouts, and they took us to Faslane Nuclear Submarine Base. As part of the tour, they took us out onto the range and gave us some old Lee Enfield 22 trainers. I was pretty damn good with that thing, and I was encouraged to continue to practice in the shooting sports. That led me to a local gun club, joined up there, and then somebody gave me a target pistol. And like your moment with the Smith & Wesson revolver, that was it. I heard harps, there was a light from on high, and I've never turned back.
Love it. And so, how do things compare, or how were things like then in Scotland compared to how they are now?
I'll give you a bit of an idea of what it took to get a firearms license in the UK. First of all, you needed to find a club and join that club. You usually had a six-month probationary period. During that time, you were expected to make either weekly or bi-weekly shoots so that the members in the club could assess your ability to be safe. After the 6 month was up, they would sponsor you and you would put your application in for a firearms certificate. That firearms certificate usually had spaces on your first application for six firearms. You would pick the caliber of the firearm that you wanted. Then when you bought that firearm, the serial number would be written in your firearm certificate indicating what it was, and that would be that caliber gone. You could apply to the local police force to have one caliber swapped out for another, but usually if you asked for more than six firearms on your first application for a license, you would be denied. So there was nothing like Canada where you get your license and you go out and buy as much as your wallet will bear. Right from the get-go, you were kind of controlled. You were limited on what you could purchase. And as a member of a club, even then, you wouldn't have really been allowed to go out and buy something like a 50 BMG because they would ask you, where are you going to shoot that? Can you shoot that at your club? And then if the answer was no, you'd be denied.
And Peter, what year would this be?
Oh, I started shooting formally in 1980.
Okay, so these rules were in place
2 years before I was born.
This is a pre-1997 Firearms Act. This is the original 1968 Firearms Act.
Oh, okay. And what about if you just wanted at that time to purchase a firearm for hunting? What was hunting like?
It was very much similar. You still had to show purpose. You would have to find a landowner who was willing to write a letter to the chief firearms officer of the police force that looked after the area you lived in, saying that you were allowed to hunt this particular area, this particular species. And again, you would have to marry the caliber that you were going to use to the game that you were going to hunt.
Wow. What about public lands?
What public land?
Okay. Yeah, it's Scotland.
The UK, there is very, very, very little public land itself. If you're on Crown land, you are not going to be allowed to hunt on there. It belongs to the Queen. She'll be looking for some money from you.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And so not just like $20 either.
No. It really wasn't going to happen.
So then fast forward to the next Firearms Act.
Well, actually, I was a victim of two gun confiscations. In 1986, there was a protracted shooting spree by a fellow in Hungerford. I won't name him because I don't believe in naming these people to do these acts. It took the police a long time to show up. He did use a semi-automatic rifle at that time. So my new-to-me FNFAL was confiscated within 6 months of me purchasing it. So after the 86 amendment was brought in, all full bore center fire rifles were confiscated. You were still allowed rim fire, but anything that had a semi-auto action, bye-bye. Yeah, and we continued that way until 96 with
a real classic example of taking the guns away from the people who didn't do it.
Yep. There is a great deal of controversy still surrounding that one in the UK, Trevor. What had happened was the person who committed the crimes had not followed the correct procedure to obtain a firearms license in the first place. He was not a member of a club. He obtained a day membership, and then he used that and his friendship, more specifically his mother's friendship with the local police force, to get a firearms license out of it. So we were penalized twice, one for not doing it ourselves, and two, because the police themselves didn't follow their own procedures.
Wow. They screwed up and the citizens suffered.
Yeah. Okay. Thus it was and thus it ever shall be.
Wow. Okay. That was the first one.
Yep.
The foul.
Yep. And then 1997, I lost all my pistols. I did get to keep my 22s for a little while, but then the following year they were prohibited as well. This was where a person with a known issue who was dancing around in his front lawn 2 days before it happened with a double barrel shotgun took a walk to the local elementary school with a couple of Smith & Wesson revolvers and a Browning Hi-Par. So after that was done, despite the fact that the judge who was leading the inquiry had recommended against a gun ban, two successive governments, one Conservative, one Labour, basically banned all pistols in the UK, and it was all to do with security theatre. There was nothing in there about public safety.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, and it seems to be the reasoning for just about all gun control. Pretty much all gun control is, you know, that security theatre. It's not secure at all.
It's smoke and mirrors. It's being seen to be doing something in an intractable problem. Now, the stupid thing is that one of the few places in the UK that you can still legally own a pistol like we would have in Canada is Northern Ireland.
Probably that way because they know they couldn't get it away from them if they tried anyway.
Well, it's funny things like that that just kind of set you back. You know, it's ended up in the UK pistol team going to Switzerland to practice. Some of my friends moved their guns to Belgium and would go for a weekend there to go shooting.
Wow. So when you say UK, the same rules are applying to all those countries?
Those rules apply to England, Scotland, and Wales. Northern Ireland, the Channel Islands, and the Isle of Man were all exempt.
Wow.
So it's somewhat akin to having a federal law applied unequally across Canada.
Yep.
Imagine that. Okay, so then when did you come to Canada?
We landed in Canada on May 5, 2005.
And so you were here post-1995 then, so you've been living in...
C-68 land the whole time.
Yep. All I've heard is stories. I've researched Canada's firearms past because one of the best predictors of the future is what's going on in the past itself. I used to come to visit my sister who came here. She moved over here first in 1979. So I didn't really know anybody who had firearms when I would come and visit. But I'd go to the odd gun shop and everything looked really good. But no, I got here after C-68 was implemented. And there's a slightly funny story attached to how I began owning firearms in Canada. I had made the promise to my long-suffering and good-natured wife that I wouldn't restart my interest in shooting until we had our own house. At that time, we were renting. And then I have to thank ex-Prime Minister Paul Martin. Mr. Martin, thank you. You got me back into shooting faster than I would have done myself. If you hadn't stood up on that stump in one September day in Toronto and promised to ban handguns, it would have been a few more years before I'd got my license.
Nice. And just like Obama is the best firearm salesman in the United States, he sold more guns in the past 8 months than anyone else.
Yeah, it's... I can't figure Obama out at all. Most of the gun laws in the United States, as soon as you examine them at a cursory level, they are all racist in nature. And you have a black president maintaining Jim Crow laws. Go figure.
Yeah, well, Uncle Tom.
Anyway. He's Uncle something.
Yeah. So, other than Paul Martin, had you had anything before that? Or was that what spurred you? And what was it like for you to get a firearms license not being born here?
Actually, I don't want to say surprisingly easy, but the benefit that I had was all of my background checks were already done. To obtain landed immigrant status, I'd already had background checks from the UK and from Saudi Arabia, where I spent a very large amount of time. So both of those were on file. It was basically a matter of finding two references like you did, getting them, filling the form. My wife signed the form, and I was good to go. There was a local GTA school.
Grand Theft Auto?
No.
other school.
The center of the universe.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, I live in the outskirts of the Greater Toronto Area. I live in Oshawa, which gets a lot of flack, but has more gun shops.
I have family in Oshawa. I could have driven by your house.
Dude, anytime you do, let me know. Come on past. You're always welcome here.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were going to turn on the security lights and lock your car.
You know,
hey, we'll be driving past Oshawa on the way to the charity shoot.
We're stopping in.
Yeah.
I may well be on the road, but if you want to team up and drive down, let me know.
Well, maybe we'll come a day early and spend one night at your place, and then we'll all leave together the next
day. Oh, we're not changing our plans again, are we?
For 10X, we might.
Don, if you want to do that, yeah, there's beds here for you guys if you want. No big issue with that.
Matthew, see?
Yeah.
Beauty.
You know, I honestly think I had it easier entering the world of firearms in Canada when I did than people have now. I'm a member of two clubs in this area. One is a 300-plus membership. The other one is close to 900. Wow. Both of which do not take any new members. They have had to close their lists simply because everything was getting too busy. Trying to find a club in the east part of Toronto that is accepting new members is exceptionally difficult.
That's really, really unfortunate. So are more clubs, if there's that much of a demand, are more clubs not popping up simply because of a lack of room to build a facility?
There are two new clubs that are going to be appearing, both on the west side of Toronto. One is Urban Tactical, and there's a second one that's going to be happening, but they don't really want to advertise that, but it is coming. The west side of the city has had more pressure than we have had, so I haven't heard anybody looking for places around here to set up a club, but you know what? If somebody had the money, they should do it.
Absolutely. It's a fantastic problem.
Well, you know, as Winston Churchill said, every time I look at a golf course, I see a willful waste of a rifle range.
Yeah, that's right.
I love that quote.
Me too.
Yeah.
So
cool.
So what are you into then? What's your focus now that you're in Canada? What are your favorite type of firearms? What's competitive, long range? God love you, trapper, skeet, and not that you would lower yourself to that, but that's for you, Jason. What's your focus?
Well, you know what? Anything that goes bang and lead comes out the end of the barrel, I'm happy doing.
Except 22s.
Yeah, I have quite a few 22s in the safe.
Would you actually tell us the number? Would you ballpark your number for us? How many firearms? Like, you want to ballpark it?
Yeah. You don't have to if you're not comfortable.
Have to, yeah.
No. It does change fairly often. I think I've probably gotten about 9 or 10 rifles and 12 handguns.
12 handguns?
Yeah.
I could hug you.
Handgun is my primary focus. It's split evenly between revolvers and semi-autos. I used to compete quite a lot in IDPA, but that's kind of drying up in the area where I am. I have shot PPC. I did go along to a bullseye match at Christmas there, having not picked up a bullseye pistol in the best part of 14, 15 years. And if I hadn't handicapped myself quite so heavily, I would have walked away with a gold medal. So
nice.
Yeah, I do a lot of pistol shooting.
Matthew, I told you he's one of the cooler listeners, but you were like, oh, no.
Yeah, I have.
That's because Bolivar just simply can't be topped.
I'm sorry. You know, Foley.
Foley's cool too.
Yeah, but they're not even listeners anymore. Carry on, Peter.
Yeah, actually, a good friend of mine, Alex Damiano, knows both of those guys from Service Conditions and CQB.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's not that big a world.
It's not.
Sadly. I do a lot of pistol shooting, you know, but I'll reiterate it. Anything that goes bang and lead comes out, I'm happy. I have shot trap. The Oshawa Skeet and Gun Club, which I'm a member of, has one of the best sporting clays and five-stand ranges that I've ever seen. I know you guys laugh at how much we pay for range fees, but they are pretty decent.
And what do you consider decent?
250?
And he's Scottish, remember.
How much?
250 a year. I pay more for my indoor range.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Okay, let's break this one down a little bit here, guys. I mean, when you think about this, you go to somewhere like Sharon Gun Club, which is an excellent range, but you need a share in the club even before you join. So shares have been going for upwards of 4,000. This is before you pay the membership and the joining fee.
Wow.
Yeah. Target Sports in Gormley. Lovely indoor range. Unfortunately, if you want to use rifle caliber ammunition, it needs to be frangible, and you're buying it from them. $700 a year.
Wow. Gun owners need to move to Atlantic Canada, where things are priced at what they're worth.
Well, they have.
That being said,
yeah.
I just took an offer of $62,000 on my house.
Yeah. What square
I accepted
foot?
Yeah. It.
Yeah. You'd be surprised at what you would pay for similar square footage here. And it's all about the demand. It's all about the.
Yeah. My house in Toronto would be $300,000 every day of the week.
Actually, you probably underestimated that by a factor of 50%.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That's sad. Well, the guy who pulled into the driveway to buy my house paid more for his truck than he's paying for my house.
That right there is funny.
Not to me, it's not.
I was watching something on TV the other day that said that Canada has some of the most undervalued real estate in the world.
Which makes no sense. Yeah, you know, you can see whales from my kitchen, but whatever.
Yeah.
Different
like
whales.
Scotland whales? Wait, that's England whales. No, something like that. UK. Hey. Speaking of the UK, I got nothing, but shall we move on to some listener feedback if we have no other questions for Peter?
I think so, Peter. That was pretty awesome.
You know, if I could have a couple of more minutes of your time.
Go nuts.
This is your show, actually. This is your episode.
It's something that strikes deep to the core of me. Every time I listen to you guys saying that you've done this IPSC course, you brought these shooters on, you've reached out, you've introduced these new shooters. Matthew, you had somebody at your brother-in-law's wedding who was looking at one of your videos. I can't help but think that's one more of us and one less of them. It comes down to what they call the social nudge. We keep nudging mainstream people closer and closer and closer towards our viewpoints. Every podcast you do, every video you put out, every time you take somebody shooting, that nudge keeps moving them over into our camp. And this is one of the big things that was completely absent in the UK. We were fractured. The shotgunners threw the rifle guys under the bus. The rifle guys threw the pistol guys under the bus. It's here, but not to the same degree. As we move people closer to our camp, I think we need to remind our camp that we need to stay within our own boundaries as well. We're all shooters. We're going to stand together or hang together. But I must reiterate that you guys do a wonderful job in keeping the Canadian firearms community together and moving them to the position where we need to be.
Wow. Thanks.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to fit out that door now.
He speaks as well as he writes.
He does. Yeah. But you know what? He's absolutely right. And we did have that same thing occur where the pistol shooters and the AR shooters were all thrown under the bus. Take their pistols, leave my hunting guns alone. That happened. But I agree. It probably didn't happen to the same extent that it happened in the UK. We've learned the people who survived C-68 or Bill 68 from 95 won't let it happen again. And the new people coming in are coming in with a different attitude. So I don't think we'll ever see it to the same extent that we saw before. And the proof is in the pudding. We got the long gun registry tossed. And that didn't happen without, you know, partnership between all the different disciplines and shooters. And there's a whole new attitude where a gun owner is a gun owner is a gun owner.
Indeed. You know, I think you once asked me what the biggest difference between gun ownership in Britain and gun ownership in Canada was. In Britain, we were brainwashed into thinking that what we were doing was wrong. Every single one of us, even although we wouldn't admit it, we knew that we were wrong. This was something that had to be hidden, had to be kept out of public view. I see some of it in Canada, but the vast majority of people, thankfully, are standing up and saying, well, what do you mean it's wrong? No, I'm harming nobody. I'm doing something that is legal. And you know what? I'm enjoying myself while I'm doing it.
Yep. And Chris Kingston, president of the Rescue Gun Club, has decided from now on we don't apologize for what we do.
And that is an attitude that I think that we need to keep mirroring left, right, and center. You know, often we see the Pride Parade in Toronto every year, and the mayor never goes. I often wonder if a gun owner's threw a Pride Parade, if he would actually come along.
Probably not. He'd probably go to the Pride Parade first, and then he should go to both, in my opinion, but that's my opinion.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, anyway.
Anyway, yeah. So, thanks, Peter.
You're that welcome.
That was very well spoken.
Listener feedback?
Listener feedback.
Peter's going to read for me tonight.
Yeah, he's going to read for Trevor.
Seems perfect. Appropriate.
Well, Owen's got the first one. So, Owen, you haven't spoken enough, so speak up and take it away.
All right. This letter
he's like,
comes.
Whoa, wait, let me wake up here. Turn the computer back on, move the mouse, get the screensaver to go away. Where am I?
And you are? Oh, we gotta stop stealing the gun dude's jokes. Oh.
It's too late.
No. If there's gonna be any stand jokes, I have to do it because I'm the oldest one here.
Fair enough. And, by the way, sorry, Owen. Peter.
Mm-hmm.
No, Peter. You're Owen. Peter.
Yep.
What color is your shirt tonight?
Red. I dressed appropriately.
You sure did.
Let's right. beam down to the planet real quick. Oh, Peter, come along.
Hey, I'm not the one with a Riker beard in his photograph.
Ooh, that
that's the
odd.
Evil Riker beard, by the way. Anyhow.
Listener
Owen.
Feedback.
Tim F. says, "Hola, gents." And I use that term very loosely. He must be talking
hola?
About me.
He's talking about
hola, as in hello.
Hola. Yeah, no, it's hola. Hola is correct. Yeah. It's not hola. No,
it's not hola. But that listen, we can all agree that hola and not gents is the term he's using loosely.
Of course, because we are clearly all gents.
Clearly.
I've been in one once.
Okay.
If you've been in a gent, I don't want to know about it.
I don't know what a gent is.
As in a gentleman's lavatory.
Oh, okay. Save. No editing required.
Once Owen recovers here, he can continue on.
Listen to the latest episode at work tonight and as I kept the flow of barrels going as usual. Just wanted to say thanks for helping pass the time with your chicanery as always. 10X.
Chicanery?
Chicanery.
Chicanery.
Do you want to define that for Trevor?
Oh, I pronounced it correctly, and now you're going to define it for me?
Well, we do have the disclaimer on our website that if you send in feedback, it may be changed so Trevor can read it.
Oh, I've got more education than you two put together. Just saying.
Clearly, it didn't work.
Yeah.
So chicanery, I'm going to take a wild stab in the dark here, you know, goofing around, horseplay.
Oh, did you really want me to define it?
Yeah. What's it mean?
Well, I know what it means. But yeah, I want to know if anybody else knows what it means.
Oh, that's easy. I'm going to say, yeah, I know what it means.
Yeah, I know what it means too. Trevor, do you know what it means?
Of course I know what it means.
Tell us.
Well, according to the definition that I
just looked up on Google.
It doesn't mean what I think he thinks it means.
Oh.
Yeah, usually it means being slight and underhanded, but I think he's meaning more messing around.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I thought it meant, too.
Yeah. It's more of a kind of subtle...
Chicanery. You know, the use of trickery to achieve a political, financial, or legal purpose. Pronounced... Chicanery.
I could hear his computer say it in the background.
Jeez, I thought it was pronounced Barack Hussein Obama.
Oh, that's pretty good too.
Cool. All right, carry on, Owen. For the love of God, please, carry on.
You want me to talk, now you want me to hurry up. Which is it, really?
I want you to hurry up and talk. Just like, shut up and eat.
Hurry up and wait.
For the sake of shutting down Trevor's tomfoolery about your SR trigger, I would like to suggest looking into Galloway Precision.
Wouldn't that be nice if those parts were legal in IPSC, but they're not.
Yeah, they make a few products to enhance the SR platform, trigger smooth kits, including ghost trigger reset bars, stainless steel guide rods, different weight recoil springs, and a few other things.
Yeah, I've looked into that before, and Trevor's correct. Because I shoot in production, I've got to run all OEM parts, so my gun is pretty much stock. Out of the box.
The best way to upgrade an SR is to upgrade it to a Glock.
Glock.
Yeah, because Glock actually does have a lot of factory parts that you can swap out, keep it legal for production, and still kind of lighten up the trigger pull and get a really nice trigger out of it.
Lattice connector, the OEM extended mag release.
Yeah, for sure. And hey, and you guys all know I'm in the market for a Gen 4 Glock, so I'm looking around still.
Yeah, we need to transfer on you for a while.
We could do that. Get some practice in, see if I like it. Anyway, continue on, Owen.
He's on to say, I have two SR40s, full-size and compact, both with a bunch of Galloway goodness inside. The full-size is my IDPA gun and has a smooth, crisp 3.5-pound trigger. Compact is my everyday carry with a smooth, crisp 5.5-pound trigger. I don't know if they ship to Canada or not.
They do, actually.
A good polish on the striker and trigger control bar helps smooth it out immensely as well. Hope this comes in handy, although I'm sure Trevor won't be happy until you engrave Glock onto the slide. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Tim F. from Prescott.
No, nope, Prescott. Says
it's pronounced
It's pronounced Prescott. Everybody in Arizona doesn't know how to say Prescott, apparently.
So, Matthew, question for you.
Yeah.
Have you or have I ever polished the internals on your SR9?
I do not believe so, no.
I would think at this point, problem. You did a 2,000-round challenge in the first 3 days.
I don't think I need to anymore. Yeah. I think they've been polished.
Yeah. That gun is broken in.
The thing is, I don't mind my trigger. Trevor hates it because he's used to another type of trigger and a really short reset. It's
not that I hate your trigger. It's that...
it's not what you're used to. It's not a competition trigger.
Right. It's actually a great trigger.
Yeah.
But the reset on it is certainly a lot longer than I'm used to. And it's even... I'll take my new Glock 22, for example. The reset is really short. Even though it's a 5.5-pound trigger, the reset is short. So, heavy trigger for a carry gun is okay, but do you need that long of a reset? Masada Yub would probably say yes, actually. Because even with the Glocks, he still wants you to take that finger and ride it all the way out to the end of the travel. Even though the reset is short, it will go farther.
Yeah, you don't want that trigger freeze.
No, exactly.
No, you got to get that, slap it.
With your gun, you have to go out farther than normal to get it to re-engage.
Yep.
And, for a carry gun, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think you might be surprised, Trevor. It's simply because you've become conditioned to what the Glock trigger will feel like. Matt is conditioned to what the SR9 trigger feels like. Both of you run the guns enough that you are happy with both of them. You're not thinking about what you're doing. It's become subconscious. The length of the trigger set, that's only an issue when you pick up his gun.
Yep. Yep.
Now, the difference is here is if I pick up a Glock, my finger will go out further. I won't shoot it as fast as Trevor, but I still won't get trigger freeze. If Trevor picked up my gun and ran it for a competition, he might.
And I mean, let's face it, I've gotten trigger freeze on my Glock.
Yeah.
And my Glock 35, which is tuned to the eyeballs.
Yeah. Well, you love to ride that reset, which is what you need to do in competition. Yep. I mean, that's not a bad thing for competitive shooting. That's exactly what you need to do. Yep. So, I mean, that's not a bad thing. It's just not combat effective, which, clearly is not an issue here in Canada at this point anyway, because we don't have that ability.
I mean, I got lucky when I got to Mag 40 because I just, flicked the switch, right? The Glock 35 is in the case, the Glock 17 is out, and you're going to run this one the way it was intended to run, and you're going to run it the way the instructor tells you to run it.
That's right.
And so it worked, but,
Now, very good. So let's move on to the next email. Thank you very much, Tim, for writing in. This next one comes to us from Eric, and we were going to have, Trevor said Peter was going to read for him, but I just realized Peter doesn't have the note, so he actually can't. So, Trevor,
message me the next one.
All right. I should actually hold on. I will.
Can you email it to him?
Of course I can. No, there you go. Message it to him.
Oh, you're going to message him this one?
Yeah, I'm going to put it in the. Remember the mistake I made last week when I said I had a man crush on Doc Wesson?
And he saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. So
there you go. Take it away, Peter.
So this is from Eric. Hey fellas, just finished listening to episode 7. You guys were talking about Midway USA and something about there not being a Midway Canada. I can't remember how it went exactly. Ask me about my ADD or a pie or my dog. A cat. I have a bike. Do you like TV? I saw a rock. Hi. I lost my focus for a bit there. Squirrel! Sorry.
I had to mute my mic. I knew it was coming, so I muted my mic.
Anyways, there will be a Midway Canada. It's coming. The site is still under construction, and likely due to the current political climate in the US, it looks like it has been delayed.
I knew I'd seen that somewhere.
Eric does go on to list the address for Midway Canada, which is http://midwaycanada.ca. And that's Eric, and he goes by the handle of Savage Lapua on CGN and Gun Owners of Canada.
Very good. I love that email. That's hilarious. When I first read that a couple days ago, I just about died laughing.
He fits in very well here.
He should be a guest, so we should get him on.
Cool. All right, well, this next one comes to us from Spencer. He writes...
I saw a rock.
Spencer writes, great episode with Doc Wesson the other night. You guys are making me jealous with all your Colt Python talk. I wanted to contribute a bit more to the Great Midway Range Bag saga, since I've been carrying that same bag for almost 2 years now. It went with me to Mag 40, where I hear one of your hosts shot a perfect 300. No, that's a myth. That didn't happen.
Oh, God.
Urban legend. He also didn't open carry.
No, I don't think he...
How much did you pay for the perfect 300?
Oh, no.
No, he got paid, actually. Didn't he get $1? Yeah. it went with him there, then across the Southwest in the back of a Mazda. It survived being handled by the trained orangutans at Delta Airline employees as baggage handlers, and it's still hanging tough. What's that, Trev?
So that's how you pronounce that.
Orangutan.
Yeah. I thought it said Woodstockian.
Orange.
I would have let you read that if I had that. Yeah, anyway. It's a great bag, although as you can see in the pic, mine is starting to show some wear and tear. The only downside to it I've found so far is that you can load it up with so much that it feels like you're carrying around a small foreign car with you.
And he could. Have you seen this man?
The man could, yes. He probably has a...
CN 500s in his pocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying, Spencer's big.
Since it's not actually made by Midway, just rebranded for them, I checked out Amazon.ca and I did find a couple that look identical with different names on them. The 511 range bag, the Nickstar Expert range bag, and the Allen Company Master Tactical range bag all look identical. The only difference I could see was the price, with 511 and the Nickstar bags being almost twice the price of an Allen bag. Wow. Of course, maybe that's the reason the Allen bag was sold out. It's funny Nickstar would have price twice the price there, because they don't have high prices on anything.
It's even funnier that the words Nickstar and Expert appear in the same sentence.
It really is.
Just saying.
I can see one reason Owen smuggled his bag across
smuggled
the border,
though.
Smuggled
is such an ugly word.
He paid duty on it. The prices I saw on Amazon.ca were ridiculous. The same Nickstar bag that sells for $165 Canadian is only $65 US on the US Amazon. Back in the day, I'd say it was the exchange rate, but US and Canadian dollars are within pennies of each other now. You really go out to import range bags for your... Oh, you really
nickels.
Should...
Nickels. Yeah, we don't have pennies anymore.
Yeah, it's nickels. Yeah, no pennies left. You really ought to import range bags for your new company. The markup looks pretty sweet. Well, there you go. Now we can't do it because all of our customers will go, you're just ripping us off.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Spencer.
Good job, man. I did have to laugh at how you guys have hosed up this search engine for Amazon Canada. I put range bag in the search window and it came back with some real gems.
What was her name?
How it thought I was looking for cake decorating basics, the psilocybin mushroom handbook, and mandolin for dummies is beyond me.
Oh, psilocybin mushrooms and mandolin for dummies?
There you go.
Was he checking out my history?
By the way, somewhere in that pic is a gun, a real 5-shot revolver. One so small you have to check your man card at the door to even look at it. It's the only pistol I've had 3 different women look at and exclaim, "It's so cute!" Next time Trevor is open carrying in Utah, he should take a trip over to North American Arms and talk with those guys. Their pistols are miniature works of art. Keep up the great show, Spencer from Smyrna.
Those pistols, the gun dudes were talking. The gun dudes actually interviewed the owners of the company that produced them, and I did go check them out. And yeah, they look like replicas or toys or miniature. I don't know. I mean, they look like something that hobbits would carry. Like, they're really cool. But
so they're small, is what you're saying?
They're minuscule. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're kind of like your arms. They're
kind of like my arms, and they are 22, so it would be perfect for me.
Ding ding ding.
I actually have a story about the North American Arms revolver. Back in the 80s, I know an American science fiction writer who accidentally flew from the U.S. to the U.K. with one of those things in its belt buckle holster. Now the thing looks like a belt buckle. It's set off in metal detectors, but it was a belt buckle. It's only when he arrived in the UK and somebody pointed it out to him, he just about had a canary.
That's funny.
That's really funny.
Wow. The next one has been sent to you, Peter.
Okay. Oh, because you were going to read it again.
And this one comes to us from Aaron. Hello, podcasters. I just want to say thanks for all the great info coming from Canadian Reload Radio Network, the Canadian Reload Radio Network, and share a short article. He's linking to the story about the 13-year-old from Alberta, Brian McLean,
yes,
who tackled a knife-wielding student and then was punished from it. Aaron goes on to say, I can sympathize with this kid because I feel that this is how my generation, born in 1985 and younger, have been told how to deal with violence. Be a good sheep, but not a sheepdog. That's too much like a wolf. Cheers, Aaron. P.S. Trevor, I got to reopen carry recently. In Canada.
And he's you need to explain yourself, Aaron.
Yeah, we got to hear about this. You're going to have to write back and tell us, how did you manage to do that?
Because, Aaron, that special, if you're guys, trying to be cute, I open carry every day at the range. So
yeah,
you need to do better.
I open carry in my house.
I open carry in the woods tonight.
Yeah, I wonder if he was open carrying like Owen was.
Yeah, with an antique.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it is. So, okay, school's point of view, sheepdog versus sheep. The schools, teacher, administrator, I'll speak on to this.
Well, can we wrap Richard's email in with it? Because he's talking about the same thing.
Oh, go for it.
Okay.
So he says, I thought it was only the U.S. that schools that punish children for standing up for their convictions. And then he continues on, but Richard did talk about that a bit too. So talk to both of them and to us, and then we'll finish Richard's email after, and then we'll continue on.
Okay. So both of them have the same concern. Both emails address the issue of why are people who are actually standing up for themselves being punished? As an administrator and as a school teacher, I always told my students, whether it was in line with policy or not, and I have to be very careful, you know, obviously I don't want to, you know, publicly speak against my employer because I can be reprimanded for that. But as a classroom teacher, I always told my students to, if you were hit and could walk away, please do and report. If you were on the ground and you were being pummeled, I need you to defend yourself and get out of the situation and then come report. Don't let anybody beat on you.
That's what we tell the kids at our school too. It's the only way to, I mean, that's the right response. You can't let somebody beat you up.
Yeah.
If you can get away, you get away. The problem, though, is that we see, you know, Johnny gets smacked and then Johnny smacks somebody back.
Yeah.
That's not.
That's right. And in hockey, there's a penalty for that. It's called retaliation, right?
Yeah.
Bolivar said it best. Don't throw the first punch, throw the last punch.
Right.
But only if you have to. He teaches his children.
Yep.
And that's okay to teach your children on the street.
Mm-hmm.
In the school, throwing that last punch is considered escalation,
right?
And possibly retaliation. A one punch is not a continuous attack. If you're punched, the guy stands there and stops.
If you can't punch him back,
right?
Yeah, you're gonna get in trouble. But if he's got, like you said, Trev, he's got you pinned to the ground, or a couple guys
get
got you pinned,
out of it.
Your way out, and then go get a teacher right away.
Yep, yep. So, now, as an administrator, I work in an alt site, an alternate location, a school for children that have been put out or have left or for whatever reason are not in the regular system. So I deal with bullies, I deal with victims of bullies, I deal with dropouts, I deal with kickouts, I deal with the gamut, I deal with all the kids that aren't in the regular system, so I get it all. And I got to tell you, if one of my kids pulled a knife on another student and another student intervened and possibly saved that child's life, the last thing I would do would be reprimand him.
Yeah. Now, I wonder if this is just the appearance of a reprimand because they have said,
this is a valid point.
The school has said that they simply sent him home to sort of de-escalate the situation. They sent him home as an administrative thing, not as a punishment.
Right, and the media will jump on this and go, oh my God, the child was punished.
Right.
Well, the child was sent home because paperwork and, you know, policy says we have to, but...
There's a
statement, a quote in the media right now from, apparently, I haven't seen it, the rumor is that the principal has been quoted to say, we do not tolerate heroism.
Yeah, and that gets me because, you know, heroism for the sake of heroism is foolish, of course, but heroism in the sake of actually doing it for why it's there, I mean, that's what we need. We need more heroes to step up.
Times have changed. In middle school, I was the exact same size I am now. I was walking around.
That's because middle school was last year for you.
Oh.
12 years in high school. Now it's not just Cameron.
That's funny. However,
sorry, Trevor.
It's okay. No, because that's funny. So you get a pass because that's funny. But so in middle school, I was 6 feet tall and at least 200 pounds. And a fight broke out in the hallway and a female teacher looked at me and said, break them up. You know, she didn't want to get involved. She didn't want to get her hands dirty. She didn't want to get hurt, but she knew that these two kids were going to hurt each other. So she looked at me as a student and said, break them up. So I reached in. I grabbed one by the collar. I grabbed the other one by the scruff, and I separated them and held them off the ground. Today, if you did that, if you told a student to break up a fight, heavens.
You'd be fired so fast.
Three lawsuits.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. We're recording this on the 6th of June, the anniversary of the D-Day landing. If you look from where Canada's come from to where we are now, heroism, yeah, I think we still need more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I concur. Yep. Well, Richard finishes up his email here. He says, hi, just a question about the format for Slamfire. Are you guys going to cover things like Case for ATC, or will that remain on CRR? I've always been interested in hearing the differences and similarities of the ongoing battle to preserve / restore the rights of firearms owners.
Well, probably not necessarily on this show. We might work it in once in a while, but we're not doing segments per se or a real big structure.
I think if something comes up that's really cool, like, you know, has been brought to our attention.
We talked about the new ATT in New Brunswick. If there's a really cool, really compelling nationwide ATT story, we might talk about it. I see it's gone off CRR, but it might come back. I don't know. I mean, it would be cool to compare and contrast us and them, but...
Well, what we will do is maybe we can get some American hosts, or American hosts. We had one last week. Some American listeners to maybe join us as a guest, and we can do a compare and contrast with actual people. Only if they care.
It would become more of a topic than an every week.
That's right. It would be a topic thing as opposed to an every week thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to get away from the real formal structure and just be a show that's based on a guest and a topic.
Cool beans. Well, thank you for the feedback, Richard. We do appreciate it, and we'll try to get a case for ATC for you just because you're you.
Yeah. And we'll email.
That was kind of creepy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. So I'll try not to do it again.
Are we ready for the best iTunes review of the week?
Is that really the best one this week?
It's the best I got. So remember,
it's the only one, wasn't it? Did we get it?
No. Yeah. Well, it's actually an old one, but it was a good one. So what we would like, you know, pretty please with sugar on top and sherry, leave us a 5-star review and a rating, and or leave us a 5-star rating and a review. Make it funny, or you might, if you want to hear it on the show, make it funny. because if you try and tug on the heartstrings, we just don't go for that.
No, we just kind of throw up in our mouths a little bit and move on. Now, 10X, he did one so well. Look, he's a guest on the show. He actually went back and edited this his iTunes review.
You could be the next 10X.
I don't think that's possible.
I don't think that's possible.
No.
First of all, you'd have to become a Doctor Who fan, and nobody wants that.
Oh, see, we even kept the Doctor Who-ness out for Trevor.
I got it in.
And he brings it in.
You know, it's not me you're hurting. It's 9X.
That's right. Uh-oh. 9X is the real fan, I think.
It's not.
It's such a good show.
He's also a Star Wars fan.
Well, see, so he's still cool then, you know? I don't understand how you can like Star Wars and that. Anyway. All right. So this one comes to us from Mokolok. Can I get a ruling on that, 10X?
It's Moloch.
Sure. Moloch.
There you go. Moloch 5150.
Moloch 5150. Love the collection of posts from other shows. And with
say it again. You got cut off. Say it again.
So, Moloch 50. It's Klingon. Moloch.
That's Star Trek.
Yes, it is. Thank you. That's where the Klingons are come from, yes. So, Muckluck 5150 says he loves the collection of hosts from other shows. And Muckluck, I got to tell you, it's going to continue. We're really looking forward to getting George on, Tim Foley, the boys from Radio Velocité and from Quebec. We want all the hosts of all the network shows to be on our show, as many American podcasters as we can. That's the whole idea of the show, is to center it around a guest. So maybe not the whole idea, but one of the big ideas.
Yeah. You're a big idea. I got nothing. Okay. Yeah, no, that was it. So thank you, Machach 5150, for your iTunes review. And yeah.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, I'd like to thank all of you for being here tonight. 10X, I can't thank you enough. It's been a real pleasure. This is the most we've ever spoken since I've been involved in podcasting, and I can't remember podcasting without you. You've always been there throughout our time on CRR. You've supported us when we got onto this show. Yeah, you're an amazing listener, an amazing writer, an amazing speaker, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you in person and crashing into the place.
Sorry, dude, I'm throwing up.
To my two co-hosts, shut the heck up. To all of our listeners, Gun Owners of Canada, monthly giveaway contest. You got to check it out. To enter, you simply need to be a member of the forum. There are knife sets, there are holsters, there are range bags, etc.
There's PCV 50s.
Check it out. What was that, Matthew?
There are PCV 50s up for grabs coming up soon.
Press Check Venture 50 cal mags up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure as well for our ego, if you could. It makes me feel better because I am a social media...
Lady of the night.
Lady of the night.
Lady of the night, yes. Like us on Facebook. Post our banner on your favorite online form signature, if you could. There's a instructions for our contact page. Go check out the Canadian Reload Radio Network. All the podcasts are phenomenal, and they're all Canadian, and they all have a very different, unique flair to them. So there's something for everybody. And this is big. We hope to see you at the Canadian Reload Radio Network charity shoot. We're donating money to a local feed bank. We're going to shoot some zombies in the face. You can win a zombie prize. You can watch Matthew and I battle it out for bragging rights on the silhouette shoot, because let's face it, we're going to be the last two at the bottom of the list.
That's right. We're going to battle it out for last place.
Last place.
I compete.
And finally, this one we cannot stress enough. Do something to help you help yourself. That made no sense.
Help you, help me, help us to help you help Trevor figure out how to help him end this sentence.
Right. And it involves joining the National Firearms Association, which has now become an official gun lobby. I don't even know what that means. And the Canadian Shooting Sports Association, which is currently suing the Ontario CFO's office. So they need your money. Join them both. Thank you very much. Take somebody shooting.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Stay classy, San Diego.
I love it.
Yeah.
if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Now, mate, you don't want to do that. I'm full of beer now. In fact, I'm so full, I'm fuller than a Queensland copper's wallet.
Holy. Yeah, I really hope he makes it to the charity shoot.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yep. I mean, we're all going to be there, except who's not coming, Matthew?
Some Owen guy.
LARPer.
You want, okay, confession time. You ever seen the movie Highlander?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. You remember near the start, there's a big scene where there's two crowds of kilt-clad warriors crashing towards each other?
Yeah.
I'm one of them.
What?
No!
Yeah, I was in the Clan Battle Reenactment Society in college. That's
no
why.
No way!
Yeah. So that's
that
why,
is awesome!
That's why I was having a go at Owen, because, I can work a Jedburgh axe, a targe, and a dirk. That's what I used to practice with.
Pretty sure there's nothing you can't do.
No. There are some things.
Name three.
Choose not to do them.
Name three things you choose not to do, because you can't do them.
Grow more hair. And I don't mean in my nostrils or in my ears.
Isn't I'm with you on that one too, man.
Oh, dude, you go for a haircut and the woman spends more time trimming your ear hair than she does on the top of your head.
Tell me. I turned 35 and I found a hair growing off the top of my nose. I smashed the mirror.
Yeah. What happens to hair? Does gravity affect it? Does
it relocates, 10X. It doesn't.
Pulls it down.
You don't. Yeah, it just relocates.
It's like glass. If you leave it in a window for so long, it sort of flows towards the bottom. That's what's happening with the air.
You're just getting taller, that's all.
You know, Matthew, I've said this before, man. Honestly, do you have to run around in a shower to get wet?
I certainly do. And I have to wear skis so I don't slip down the drain.